You're listening to The Wildcast with Calvin Coyles.
Welcome to The Wildcast. I'm your host, Calvin Coyles, international speaker, best-selling author, and your personal growth mentor. Each week, I answer your questions in wellness, income, love, lifestyle, and direction, as well as a few epic interviews with thought leaders from around the world. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Calvin here from Wild Success. Welcome to another episode of The Wildcast. It's obviously very, very different. We are joined by the incredible Kieran from Hypnobirthing Australia, and Bear Your Birth is the brand. Yep. We're going to talk so much today about Kieran, her journey, hypnobirthing, and all that good stuff as well. But of course, we also have the beautiful Ashley Coyles as well with us as well. Is this the first podcast that we've done?
I used to host the podcast.
I met with the two of us with a guest.
Yes. With a guest, yes.
Yes. Sorry.
We'll just deal with some couples therapy. It's actually a couples therapy session. Kieran's wearing multiple hats today. So today's a bit of a different podcast for a lot of different reasons. Ash and I, as many of you know, gave birth on the 24th of September to a very beautiful little Lila Ray Coyles. And a hypnobirthing was a really big part of that process for us as well, and was, I would say, really essential for our ability to have a well-informed birth and a really beautiful, healthy birth as well for our child. And we owe a huge credit to that to Kieran, because before we gave birth to Alila, we went and did Kieran's hypnobirthing class, which was just remarkable. And we loved every minute of it. And so as soon as we had that, before we had given birth to Alila, we said we wanted to get you on a podcast. It just so happened that we did it after we'd given birth as opposed to beforehand. But we will first start by saying thank you and welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Today, what we want to cover is a couple of things. One, we want to talk about you and about hypnobirthing and about Bear Your Birth and about your journey and how this all came to be and what is hypnobirthing for our audience. And then we've never shared our birth story publicly. And so we wanted to talk a little bit about what we've been through and what the journey was of bringing Alila Ray into the world and then how hypnobirthing was part of that as well. And I'm sure you've got a heap of questions for us about that experience and perhaps can share some light on what's normal and what's natural and what's part of the medical system and all of those different things. So that's basically the agenda for today. We want to say thank you for being here. We really appreciate you being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited.
Okay, well, let's get started telling us a little bit about hypnobirthing. For people that don't know and have never heard of that concept before, what is hypnobirthing? How did you get started in that space? What's the Bear Your Birth movement? What's all of that stuff? Give us the backstory.
So I teach the Hypnobirthing Australia program.
Yeah.
So the concept of hypnobirthing is all about empowered birth. And that can kind of seem like a bit of a buzzword in the birth space. You know, what does that even mean? But what we really try to teach mums and their birth partners is that you have so much control over your own journey in the birth space. And people think that you can't control birth, so why bother trying getting educated or prepared? But the reality is, when you don't have that education, things can really turn medicalized very, very quickly, which can often lead to women experiencing things like birth trauma, which can impact the way that they move into mothering as well. So by actually taking time to get educated, it gives you the ability to be able to have say and control over that birth experience. As well as that, it helps to understand the physiology of birth, right? We are actually designed to do this. Our bodies know exactly what to do, but the way that the medical system's set up, it really impacts us using that primitive instinctual part of our body. So by understanding that and the way that things like fear impact the way that we progress through birth can really remove that that fear of the unknown and our body not being able to get into that place where it just takes over.
Yeah, absolutely. There was a couple of things when we did the hypnobirthing course that just, like, a couple of little metaphors that just got me straight away. One of them was the metaphor that you share both of, like, the cat giving birth and how we know to give that space, and I'd love for you to share that. And then also the swimming between the flags metaphor as well. I think that just really beautifully describes what it should be about, but often it's really not about.
Yeah, so the mother cat, it's a beautiful story about the cat getting into a place where it's nesting sometimes, resting sometimes, moving, very hands-off. It's very trusting. It knows what's happening. And the beautiful thing about that script is it's read not knowing that it's a mother cat. It's just as if it's a woman in labor. And then at the end, it's kind of revealed that it is a cat. And we trust those animals to give birth. We're very hands-off. We know that they're going to do exactly what needs to be done. We don't come in and tell it what to do or, you know, try poking around and seeing what's happening. So if we can be hands-off for birthing mothers as well, our bodies know how to take over. And that swimming between the flags, that analogy really talks about the relationship with your care providers. Mm-hmm. So if you're on the beach with the lifesavers, you swim between the flags knowing that that's the safest place. If you choose to swim outside of those flags, you know that you're taking on extra risk, right, where that's not being monitored. But if you're splashing around in the water, having a good time, and a lifeguard comes and rips you out of that water, you're probably going to be really unhappy. I didn't need the help. I didn't want the help. Why did you take me out of that? And if a woman is progressing through labor and there's no risks to her, why rush? Mm-hmm. And it can often be a really rushed process in a hospital. Mm-hmm. A hospital is a business, right? So they're moving women through. It's often failure to wait as opposed to failure to progress, which is so often told to women. But if you need the support and you need the help swimming between the flags, you know you've got that medical support there. You've got those people there that are trained to be able to help you. But we don't have to have it managed. We don't have to have people moving things along and managing our labours if there's no risks to mum or baby.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Ash and her family came from a very different background with regards to birth than what mine did. So when I was born, mum had an emergency Caesar with me, and then she had one automatically with my sister. She's had a Caesar. And then the four births that I've sort of been part of have been my four cousins, and they were all Caesars. So I never really had an idea or even really a thought process of what a natural birth was like or what that journey was like. I just thought you went to the hospital and you had the operation. And like, I knew obviously women gave birth naturally and had vaginal birth, but I didn't really have any idea around what that's like. And the idea of what's portrayed in the media through either birthing stories or movies that demonstrate or show birth is so far removed from what it actually was like, certainly for us. Like the way that we approached that was very, very different. And I'm really interested to get your take on, you've got two beautiful kids, and you used hypnobirthing for that process as well. So like, how did you come to learn about hypnobirthing? What was that story and journey like for
you? Yeah, for me, it was like a last minute ditch to try and help myself. I was terrified. So the girl's dad and I, we conceived via IVF. So it was a really long journey for us to fall pregnant. And it was only a couple of weeks after that I thought, holy shit, now I have to give birth, and I'm actually really terrified. Like, I always thought of birth as a scary concept, but never really pictured myself having to do it. Mm. We always communicated really well, the girl's dad and I, except in really, really stressful situations. And for me, birth was going to be the most stressful situation I could ever find myself part of. So I thought I'd find a doula. So for anyone that's not familiar with the concept of a doula, they're really there to help with that emotional support of mum, really focus on mum, whereas the medical support helps with, you know, focusing on baby, keeping baby healthy and those checks and those sorts of things. But no one was available because I was due on the 2nd of January. So everyone was going away for Christmas. So rude. So I thought, it doesn't matter. I will get through birth. I'll just have the epidural like everyone else. You know, it's fine. The anxiety for me just kept creeping up stronger and stronger, and I'd push it down. And, you know, it's one of those things that you can't just push down. You kind of have to address it. And I'd actually read the words hypnobirthing when I was looking for a doula, but I thought, nah, not for me. That's weird. Hippie. I don't want to be hypnotized. Like that. No, didn't even really look into it. But it was around 35, 36 weeks, and I was just terrified. The real last thing for me that really pushed me over the edge to searching for something was going to our hospital antenatal classes and them talking about an epidural, which was going to be my coping mechanism. And I thought, no, that sounds terrifying as well. So there's got to be something, right? Our bodies are designed to do this. So I found the Hypnobirthing Australia online program. I was about 36 weeks. And I thought, well, what's the worst thing that can happen? I'm desperate here. So I did it. And it was like an instant shift for me. My mindset instantly changed. I felt really excited. I felt really trusting. Max and I just felt like our relationship strengthened so much. You know, previously when I thought, if he tells me to relax or tries to tell me to calm down or I'm doing fine, like I will not handle that very well. But he knew all of the same information that I knew, and he was able to really effectively be my rock and my support when I started doubting myself again. And he was really incredible through the birth. So, you know, hands-on with the tools and just reminding me of how incredible I was and all those sorts of things. And I was really receptive to that support because I knew what we were working towards together. Yep. And I had such a beautiful experience. And I was really, I really didn't like sharing it. I didn't like telling people what I'd done. I'd had a birth without having the drugs. And I just felt like people might think that I had this tall poppy syndrome or my birth was better than theirs. So I didn't like telling anyone about what I'd done and about how proud I was of myself. It was about a year after that my midwife found me on Instagram and told me, you know, I still think about your birth. It's a really beautiful birth, really incredible. And I had, at the time, I had lots of midwives coming to tell me, you know, we heard about your birth and it was so beautiful. But yeah, when my midwife contacted me that long after, I thought, why after all this time does she remember my birth? Why is that so special? Which is kind of when the cogs started turning and I thought, maybe I do need to share more of this. Maybe I can do something to actually help and support women through this in the same way that I got that help and support, which is when I decided to train to teach the program. Yeah. So I had my second birth after I had been teaching and that was a really, really quick birth. I decided to have a home birth.
Yeah, nice.
I just had this internal knowing that it would be really quick and I wanted to be prepared and ready at home instead of having an accidental car birth. So 2 hours for me, and had I not had that trust in my body, that would have been a really, really scary experience.
Yeah.
My midwife arrived 10 minutes before, you know, my baby was crowning, had so there 10 minutes before I gave birth, and that could have been really scary, but I just fully trusted my body and the process, and I knew that, you know, it was happening as it was supposed to. So I was really able to just lean into allowing my body to take over and do what it wanted to do.
Yeah, wow, amazing. What was some of your big takeaways from hypnobirthing? And like, because you were the one that actually found it. I didn't even really know hypnobirthing existed, right?
No,
so this is obviously all Ashland, just for everyone who knows at home.
A lot of the mothers and things that I follow on Instagram had all shared their experiences with hypnobirth from across the country. So it was something that I knew that I wanted to learn about. And that type of process was absolutely something that I wanted for us, for our birth. But probably my biggest takeaway from you would definitely have been trusting your instincts, trusting your gut, trusting your body to do what it's designed to do, although you'll hear later that didn't necessarily go to plan, which brings me to my other takeaway, which was to not be so attached to the outcome of the birth and, you know, my birth plan needs to be X, Y, Z, but to design your plan around how you want to feel during labor and make sure that the team and the support that you have around you is conducive to those feelings. So feeling confident and safe and happy and loved and all of those feelings that you want to experience can still be available to you regardless of what type of birth you end up having. So that was probably the biggest thing for me, which really helped given our outcome.
That's definitely a really big thing to start with, that we get couples to work out, because that is so different for everybody. And when we talk about empowered birth, it's what are those feelings associated with it? Because like you say, you can have those any way that birth goes, whether you have a drug-free vaginal birth, whether you have a planned cesarean, you can still feel a certain way. So making sure that you make decisions that lead you to keep that feeling at the forefront.
Yeah, 100%.
There's a couple of really big things that stood out for me in hypnobirthing, which I was like, fuck, I love this automatically. Because so much of what we teach in NLP and coaching and in hypnotherapy is sort of embedded and hardwired into hypnobirthing, right? There's a lot of very similar things. So for people that are at home that don't understand hypnobirthing, and you know, obviously everything has its own associations, right? So hypnobirthing has its own branding piece. So what are some of the key differences for what we would consider to be like the normal medicalized birth process as opposed to hypnobirthing? Like if I was looking at two different labors or two different experiences, what are the key distinctions just for everybody at home so they've got a bit of a reference of like, oh, what is hypnobirthing all about?
Yeah, so hypnobirthing doesn't necessarily mean that it can't be medicalized.
Yeah.
In fact, hypnobirthing works really well with what we'd call a medicalized birth. So if you have to have interventions, augmentation of labor, which is when they speed labor up, if you choose to have pain relief, all of those things. So I really talk about birth as a physiological birth. So that's what is often referred to as like a natural birth. I don't like using natural for that description, because it means that if you have a medicalized or C-section, it's not natural, not the case.
All birth
is natural birth. So there's a physiological birth, and so often people really come out of the hypnobirthing classes, they go in not trusting themselves and come out thinking, yes, I really want to have a physiological birth because I really understand the process, understand the way that my mind works, understand the prep, all of those things. But if that doesn't eventuate, using the tools through that medicalized process, and the tools that become really strong and powerful through that process are the decision-making tools. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we use brain. So asking questions about what the benefits are, what the risks are to certain medical interventions, what the alternatives are, because there's always alternatives. What's your intuition telling you, which is something that you took out of it. Really trust that intuition, because there's so often we look back and we think, I knew I should have trusted my instinct there, but we didn't. And then N in brain is nothing. What if we do nothing? Hospitals are so used to managing labors. They're so used to doing something that it's really hard to just sit on your hands and not manage a woman in labor. Mm-hmm. So if a care provider comes and says, all right, we need to speed things along, and then actually there's no risk to mum or baby to need to speed it along. It's just fitting within their timelines. Yeah. Just saying, what if we wait 5 minutes or 10 minutes or an hour? Or what if we actually wait a week before inducing? You know, do we actually have to do something here? And then if they say, yeah, like we really, and this is where swimming between the flags, yes, we really do think that, you know, there is a risk to your baby, then looking at the benefits and risks and alternatives to all of your options. Yeah. And they're so important for mum and baby and looking short term and long term. It's not just what's this next 5 minutes to keep baby safe. You know, coming out of birth with a healthy, alive baby isn't enough. We need healthy mums as well. And I say that in terms of physically and mentally. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mentally is so important, right? You might come out of a birth and be physically fine, but you mentally feel traumatized. And being traumatized, your birth doesn't have to look a certain way. Being traumatized is if you feel it was a traumatic experience, it's traumatic. Mm-hmm. And that often comes down to women feeling like they're out of control. They've got no control, no say of what's happening, no understanding of the process. You know, things just spiral. I mean, you don't have that education. That's often what can happen, is it spirals down that really medicalized process without you understanding. So, you know, I know we're going to get into your birth story, but someone might have had that exact same birth and you come out feeling really positive and happy and someone else is really traumatized by it. So that decision-making process is really, really important when it comes to that.
Yeah, absolutely. Like some of the things that there's so much in what you just shared that I want to touch on. One of the things is, you know, we talk a lot about in our work significant emotional events and how those have major impacts in our lives long term. And I don't think there's many things in life that are more significant emotional events than the birth of your child, if you're fortunate enough to have a child. And for us, it just made sense that we would be as best prepared as possible, right? So I read books, we attended the course, we did as many things as we possibly could. Not because we didn't feel like we weren't able to deal with the challenges they came up, but one of the things that we're big on is that, like, leaders anticipate and act, and you could be a leader for your family. And so if you anticipate that in the birthing process, there's a lot of things that can go off plan or wrong, and so be prepared for that and be as equipped as possible. And I'd rather be in the birth process knowing that I've got this entire skill set of things that I can rely on and never need them than to need them and not have them. And, you know, for me, financially, it wasn't expensive to do your program. I thought, fuck, you should be charging a lot more than this. That's a whole nother conversation. But, you know, just to be able to access that tool was really valuable. And what really stood out for me was, you know, I got so much out of the process, and we teach this stuff. Like, if we took all of our content and made it a birth-based program, it would be very close to hypnobirthing naturally, right? So like little things for people at home. So when we talk about reframing, you guys do that really well. So it's not a contraction, because that's, you know, it has negative association, or it's just energetically less. It's a surge, which, you know, it's a different mindset around that. You know, you're not considered to be a patient as you would be in the medical system. You know, you're just a mum and a birthing mum. And just like little language things make a big difference as well, instead of pushing its breathing and bearing down. Like, I loved all of that language shift, because that makes a big difference, especially if you're repeating that and you're in an intense experience and you're repeating really intense language, you're going to make that much bigger than it needs to be. So I love that part of it. I also loved the brain acronym. I thought that was excellent. That really helped us, especially because you need little things in the midst of a chaos to be able to navigate your way through that, and that made a huge difference. But one of the biggest things for me that I really got from hypnobirthing was permission to take control and responsibility for the space. So we don't know each other that well, but for everyone that knows me at home is I'm not backwards and coming forwards, right? I'm used to being in control and I'm used to being able to take charge of situations. However, I never in a million years expected that that was my place in a medical environment giving birth at a hospital, because for me, someone went to medical school and they spent $100,000 learning how to be a doctor, and now they're a pediatrician or they're a obstetrician. And so it's like, this is your arena. So I'm just going to respect that you guys know what's best for the child. Not fully realizing, well, what's best for the child from a medical perspective is not necessarily what's best for mum and bubs. And we talk about this all the time, that surviving does not equal thriving. And I think that's coming back to your point, right? Like, I know that you have to take a different type of risk in order to thrive than you do to survive. And the medical system and like the hospital, I'm sure, are not reporting on how many women leave with really your beautiful birth experience as opposed to how many kids did we lose in labor. Like, if that's what they're attempting to solve, which is let's make sure no one dies, it's a very different approach than if you're trying to think of, well, what's the best wellness outcome for mom and bubs? And as soon as I got that switch, that changed everything for me. And then also, like for me, we're so big on designing an environment to create state so that mom and bubs can be in the best place. And so we were very intentional about the way that we designed our space, which I didn't think you could do. I didn't think you could bring in stuff to a hospital. But we had...
kitchen sink.
We bought fucking everything. And
fairy lights, salt lamps, diffusers, affirmation cards.
And you know what was really interesting to me?
We were in there and so many midwives would come in and go, oh my God, I've heard about this space. This is so beautiful. I just love being in here. I'm like, fuck, is not every room like this? Like, why would you want to spend your labor under fluorescent lights in a clinical hospital? As soon as you had given me sort of permission to go, hey, like, you can do whatever the fuck you want. I was like, oh, fuck, this is excellent. I'm off to the races. And knowing that I wasn't being disrespectful of somebody that's in a position of authority, but rather we were working as a team. And the analogy that you gave, I thought was fucking brilliant, which was, when you book a flight to Bali with Virgin, you don't go, hey, is it okay if I travel in this time and if I fly in this seat? And you know, you just say, hey, I want to fly to Bali on Thursday. So this is I'm paying you to fly to Bali on Thursday, get me there. And I was like, oh, that's a much better mindset to have, that you are in many cases a paid customer. So you get to choose what you want the experience to be. As soon as that switch flicked for me, it was like, I get that. And that was a real game changer, because if I struggled with that, knowing what I'm like, I can imagine that most, nearly everybody else struggled far worse than I did in that process around like advocating for what you want in the birth process.
I think that's definitely one of the biggest shifts that I find people struggle with after they've done the course. The women seem to really kind of understand that, yes, this is how my body works. I understand the physiology. I understand the hormone releases and what I need to do to create them. And the birth space, setting up the birth space is one of those so simple, yet really, really powerful things to help with the release of hormones that our body needs.
Yeah.
And we go into a lot of detail why that is in the program. But that transition to thinking, I'm actually in control here and this care provider works for me, is one of the ones that people struggle with. And because we've grown up thinking that we go to hospital when we're sick and someone who knows better will tell us what to do to get better. But the reality is that, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, hospitals are businesses and they're governed by a whole lot of policies and procedures that are often not women-centered and often not based on evidence-based research. So it's what can we do as a hospital, as a business, to protect ourselves for insurance reasons.
Yeah.
So often that's where that medical spiral can come in, because they're used to using those policies and procedures which dictate what they should do. But actually, if we can step into our power, right, no one can give us our power in this birth space. We have to find it.
Mm.
If we can find it and step into it, we can take charge and take control. And the biggest thing, taking one step back from that, is choosing a care provider that you know is actually going to support you in the birth that you want.
Yeah.
So this is why things like the birth preferences are so powerful, because it helps you figure out what you actually want, helps you figure out the care provider that is actually going to help you achieve that birth and help you feel empowered in stepping into that space and taking charge and taking control, as opposed to feeling like you have to be dictated to by someone else.
Yeah.
And I think there was a big lesson for us in that, in the fact that, you know, we went through the first process of trying to select a private midwife, because I thought that's what you did. And then I thought everyone had an obstetrician. I didn't understand anything about the way that that world worked. And we were referred to Dr. Lisa Fowler, who we think was excellent. She was great for us. But when we're attending the hypnobirthing class, I was like, fuck, if we've got a doc, like I didn't know anything about Lisa Fowler at this point. I was like, if we've got somebody that's not going to be an advocate for us in this place, are they just giving us lip service? Or is there someone that genuinely believes in that? I remember having a conversation with you over tea and you saying, oh, there's two people in Perth that are really well known. There was this male doctor, I don't know what his name was, and Dr. Lisa Fowler has a good rep. So that put me at ease because I think, you know, in the world that we live in, particularly with regards to what we're dealing with at the moment with medicalization and vaccinations and all that world, it's very easy to see that these are two opposing forces. And I really wanted to be able to go into the birth experience knowing that we had a team of people that were working for the same goal, not us against the hospital. Like, we wanted to be aware that they have their own things as we have ours, but we ideally should, you know, 1 + 1 = 2, not as me equals more than two. So we thought that was really great, but there was other people that I knew that were at the hypnobirthing workshop, and I was like, your providers are not working in alignment with this. And so if you're listening and you've already selected an OB or a private midwife and they're not on board with it and you want to do it, like, fire that person and find somebody else. Because if you don't have the right team in place, it's difficult as it is with the right team. It's almost impossible if you have the wrong team in place as well. And then you regret not making and having the courage to make that decision for the rest of your life. Like, you only get really one shot to do this properly per kid, obviously. So I think it's really important that people are open to, like, just really strongly advocating for what's in the best interest of their child, not trying to make everybody else happy, which I think is probably a big breakthrough in most people's lives anyway, irrespective of it being about birth. Yeah. I think that's big.
And this is where language can come in really important as well. I've had a client ask me just recently, how do I know if my care provider is actually supportive? And or you know, if they suggest something when I'm in labor, how do I know if they're just telling me, like, some bullshit or if they're actually thinking about me and the baby here? And this is where choosing your care provider and building that relationship. Mm. We know the gold standard of care for low-risk women is continuity of care with a known midwife. These are the women that are trained to help with a physiological birth, so that really natural birth process. And we see better outcomes for mum and babies in that. Of course, picking someone, whether it's a midwife or an obstetrician, that you feel really connected to, and listening to the language that they come back to you with. So do you feel comfortable to ask questions and feel like they're actually giving you a response and giving you the time to talk through your worries? Or are they being really dismissive? Are they saying, we'll see how it goes, right? Because if they say things like that, it's a bit of a red flag that they're not really helping support you in your plan. Mm. Do they say, you don't need a birth plan, we don't worry about those, you'll just have to see what happens, right? Because if they don't want you to have a birth plan or they don't want to talk about it, again, it's a sign that they don't want you to step into that power. They want to be the one to hold that power and manage and dictate what happens, which is when that medicalized process can spiral. So is your care provider really supportive of what you want, or are they just tolerant of it?
Yeah.
And there's a really big difference there.
Yeah. Our care providers referred us to do hypnobirthing. So they had a list of different birth education services that were available, and hypnobirthing was one of them. So that was a really good sign to me that they're not going to recommend something that they're not comfortable with their patients actually following through with. And they recommended to do a birth plan and all of those kinds of things. So we were really, really blessed with the team that we had around us.
We were quite concerned though with
going to the hospital though, because we just didn't know any of the midwives there. And so we were like, well, this could either make or break the experience. And it was interesting because we had two main midwives while we were at St. John of God, and they probably were both perfect for what we needed at the time.
100%.
When we first got there, the first midwife,
we rock up and like, oh, Ashley and Calvin, oh, we're so excited to have you here.
She was an energizer bunny.
She's a million miles an hour. Just wouldn't stop talking. Reminded me a lot of my mom, actually.
Which made us feel comfortable in that moment, because it was like, okay, cool, there's someone here that's like, she just had a really good energy about her for us just rocking up being a little bit nervous. Like, she made us feel like we've known her for years, like just best friends.
She was lovely. And then we had her on board, and then obviously they've got shifts, so we had her for 8 hours or whatever, but our labor took, you know, nearly 27 hours. So then this second shift that we had, we were fortunate because we saw her on the night and then we stayed over that night, and then the next day she was there on shift, and then we saw somebody else in the afternoon. And it was interesting because when who was our second midwife?
Sally. Sally was unbelievable.
Oh my God.
But when she first came on board,
she was so completely different to the one that we just had. She was far more grounded, but we thought she was quite cold in the beginning. And I think just because maybe she just didn't like the other midwife that was there. But once Sally was excellent at being there without her knowing that, without us knowing or feeling like she was there. If she didn't need us anything, she didn't say anything. She just left us in her space. She was super supportive. And then what really was amazing for us, which I didn't expect to have happen, was when we eventually moved and moved to a Caesar, she came into the suite with us. She was there next to me and Ash during that time. So about continuity of care, she was with us from what, lunchtime all the way through until 9 p.m. that night when we delivered Alila, which was amazing because I was a fucking mess. Like I was just so emotional. I was bawling my eyes. I couldn't look at anybody. I was all over the place. Ash was totally fine, but I was a complete mess. And that was excellent. So I think we were very, very lucky to get great care at St. John of God. And then afterwards, post-birth, we had great care the whole way, other than maybe one midwife who was just a bit
and
difficult.
They were all very respectful of our birth plan as well. Like, even though they knew it wasn't exactly what we wanted, there were still elements that they were like, well, this is part of your birth plan, so let's do this. Yeah. So they were super respectful of that, and they made sure that they were trying to, like, adhere to that as closely as possible within the circumstances that we had.
I think for me, in just a summary of hypnobirthing as a whole, what I took away from hypnobirthing was a couple of things. One was an understanding of, hey, this is what actually birth is going to be like for you in reality. And these are the different ways that your birth can go, so you're prepared for it. And that was the first time someone had explained to me what that was going to be like, especially coming from a family that had all done Caesars, so I didn't know what natural birth was expected of. And then even if you have a family with have done natural birth, that's only their experience of it, right? So that was really great to inform me as a dad and as a birthing partner, how to support Ash through that process. The other thing that was great about it as well was it gave me a series of tools and us a series of tools to reframe and reshape the experience to be more positive as well for us, so that when things happened, we felt like we were more in control of the outcome and advocating for our rights as well. That was a really big one I wasn't really aware of. And then the final piece, which we haven't really touched on, was actually the hypnosis part for pain management. And so we teach hypnosis here, and we teach hypnosis for pain control and anchoring and state and all that sort of stuff as well. So like trigger words and pressure point, acupuncture, all that sort of stuff. So we teach that anyway. But doing that specifically for birth and that process was really quite empowering as well. And we used that quite a lot all the way through Ash's active labor until we ended up getting an epidural. And even then, since then, we used that throughout that process. So that was really empowering as well, to be able to give us the best chance to have the best possible birth experience as well, because otherwise it'd be very difficult for most people to go through that. It's really hard. So I think there's a lot of good stuff in all of that. And whether or not you use every tool that's available, again, I come back to that point of it's better to have it and not need it than to need it and not have it.
Yeah,
I think it was just fantastic. In terms of resources for people with regards to hypnobirthing, what's the best place? I mean, obviously, that you've got a great Instagram, right?
Yeah.
Which we'll put off all the links and the details as part of that as well. But where would you encourage people to get started to find out more about hypnobirthing?
If they're wanting to actually head along to a class, they can go to the Hypnobirthing Australia website, which would just be hypnobirthingaustralia.com.au.
Yep.
You can find a list of practitioners there. And then just connecting with local practitioners in your area or even across Australia. One of the things that I really kind of encourage my clients to do is look at the content that they're consuming, because that can have a really big impact. Are you consuming content that frames birth in a really kind of scary frame? Or are you consuming content that's really empowering and really positive? So making sure that you follow people on social media and going and finding a list of those practitioners and actually following like their Instagram pages and things like that would be a really great place to start learning about the different language, the different approaches to birth and, you know, how you can actually frame that. Another really great resource actually would be the Australian Birth Stories podcast. Mm-hmm. They've actually got a list on their website that you can filter by topic and you can filter by hypnobirthing.
Right.
I always encourage my clients to go and do that and listen to that with that filter on, because there's a whole range of different birth experiences in there, but the way that they talk about birth is so different to someone that's not prepared and educated and feeling scared through that process. So it's not like coming in with a narrow lens where you're like, I'm only going to talk, let you read things about, you know, physiological birth. It's the language and the approach to it, and they can look so different, yet still be really beautiful experiences. Yeah.
That's such a big point. I was consuming a lot of content leading up to falling pregnant and then whilst pregnant as well. Like, I was addicted to watching birth vlogs on YouTube, but I didn't realize until we came and did hypnobirthing with you and we did like a fear release process, how much I had picked up, and like, there was like certain things that I would I didn't realize, not consciously, that they were playing on my mind, in the back of my mind. So it's just such an important point to make sure that it is positive things that you're watching, and making sure that you're not attaching to other people's stories. Yes. And subconsciously having those in your mind that can contribute to feeling really overwhelmed and fearful leading up to birth.
Because as soon as you've got a bump, you become a magnet for the "I was in labor for 3 weeks" stories, right? You get enough of that in person, you don't need that in your feeds as well.
I think that's super important.
So we did hypnobirthing. We did the 2 days, which was epic, and everyone should do it. Then after that, obviously, we got prepped for our birth, and then...
Yeah, I used the hypnobirthing tracks a lot leading up to our birth. So we went overdue. So the tracks and things like that for me to utilise throughout that process of being like, oh, my due date's come and my due date's gone, and being able to kind of maintain some sense of calm. Because at that point in time, you're so uncomfortable, everything hurts, your baby is giant, it feels like it's trying to crawl out of your belly, like there's just so many aches and pains and all sorts of things that you're just like, oh my god, when, and also the anticipation of like, when is this baby gonna come? So being able to use those things, even like not during labor but leading up to the due date, was just super powerful for me personally, because I could just sit there with tracks in my headphones bouncing on my ball, and then afterwards just feel like, oh, it's all good, she'll come when she's ready.
So with the Hypnobirthing Australia program, you get the 2 hypnosis scripts, which are so good. So obviously for that relaxation and to helping with that conditioning, the visualizations, those sort of things. Good. And then the affirmations for a beautiful birth. Yes. So just
thrashed that.
So many did I. That was definitely my favorite to listen to. Yeah. So, yeah, those tracks are so good. And also then you get the scripts as well. So being able to be involved as a partner and reading those scripts. And, you know, that's kind of where that birth partner role really comes alive, when you 100%. Can start being like, this is a really effective way to be able to support.
Yeah.
As well as advocating in that birth space, and we're in that really vulnerable position as birthing mothers, actually being in charge of, like, the tools and you know, the touches and acupressure and all of those beautiful things.
You want to go through the birth process and our birth experience?
Yeah, so we were headed to be overdue. Well, we were overdue, and we were doing regular checkups with our team at this point in time, and they had indicated that it would be a good idea to maybe do some stretching sweeps and just see how everything was going. And at that point in time, I was ready for the additional help. It was just, just so uncomfortable, and just the anticipation of wanting to meet her was just too much to bear. So I was ready for the just check me, see how we're going, and see if we can get things kicked off a little bit. So we did 3 stretch and sweeps over the space of about 10 days, I think it was, wasn't it? So they were very patient with us in terms of, like, I think normally you would get a stretch and sweep, if nothing's happened in 48 hours, they'd probably urge you to go a little bit further and start some, you know, drugs or whatever at that point. But our team were really great and they were super patient with us. And then we got to the 41-week mark, and because we were in the medical system, they don't let you go past 41 weeks and 3 days, is it?
41,
10, so 41 weeks and 3 days. So we ended up getting induced at 41 weeks, which we had the option of 41 weeks or waiting until, I think it was past 41 and 3.
There was two
options that we kind of had, and for me, just intuitively, I felt like the earlier date was what was right for us. So
we decided to go in on a Thursday night, and then that meant that we're going to be in over the weekend and we could relax a little bit more, and there was also like a lot of stuff around, there was just so many people giving birth as well, and we weren't sure if we're going to be able to get the space that we wanted to have as well.
So they gave us a bit of leeway, and they were going to let us go past the 41 over to the whatever it is, 40 plus 10. So anyway, we got induced, and so we were induced on the Thursday night. So basically it starts slow. They put a pessary up there to release some hormones to try and soften things up so that then in the morning they could break out waters. So we went in on the Thursday night, and that was actually really nice. Like, it was relaxed. The team was across our birth plan. We've got to set up the space how we wanted to. It didn't feel like this is the plan, this is what you need to do, and there was no like rush or urge around anything. So we're pretty happy with the energy in the space that we had when we initially got there. The next morning, we got woken up at 5:55. This was probably the only part of the experience that I was kind of like, this is a bit shit. Because we were just abruptly, like literally just curtains opened, lights switched on. Hey, we're going to break your waters now. And yeah. I was like, hang on a second. Like, the conversation that we'd had with our obstetrician was, we're going to get induced at 8 o'clock. Then she's going to give us 4 or 5 hours to get things going. And then if need be later in the afternoon, we could start a Syntocin drip. That was kind of the plan that we'd had. And so they busted open at 5:55. So I'm like, this isn't a plan. Like, we're expecting to have this happen at 8 o'clock. And they were like, oh, no. We've spoken to your OB. She's happy for us to do it now. So that was probably one aspect where I was like, this isn't really how I thought this day was going to go. Yeah. So anyway, we were up within 5 minutes, back into the birth suite, and they had broke my waters. So because of how it was sort of framed that we would have time to get labor going ourselves, I sort of in my head I was like, cool, so it'll just be like a gradual thing as opposed to like straight away. But you know, that's what happened. So basically, from as soon as they broke my waters, the contractions just started like intense and like one after the other straight away. So there was no
like once they started the what's called the pessary the night before at 4, you were already having mild contractions, like period-based cramping at that point. And then from 6, you were having 3 to 4 contractions every 10 minutes at that point.
Yes. Yeah, so that was intense.
And there was no build. It was just
instantaneous. And I obviously heard a lot about inductions and that contractions can be a lot more intense, a lot quicker than as you, when you go into spontaneous labor. Obviously, there's a bit more of a gradual build-up. So I was somewhat prepared for it, but probably not as prepared because I was just like, whoa, okay, cool, it's game time. Like, we're on. So, we were active laboring for quite some time and it was, I think it was 6 hours or so, and the contractions were getting like crazy intense, like almost too much for me to bear. And we were using all of the tools in our tool belt. We had the TENS machine, the Calvin was doing the acupressure.
TENS machine was great.
Was excellent. Great. Yeah, loved it. And I was listening to the birth affirmations. Like, it was, it was a great start to the day, and then it just got too intense and nothing was really working for me anymore. So in my head, I was kind of like, if I've dilated, I've progressed, then I feel mentally I can continue going and I can push through this pain, because it was, it was unlike anything I'd ever experienced. But if I haven't, then I don't know how much longer I can do this for physically. Because we were in overnight, we were being observed every 2 hours the night before as well. So it was like, it wasn't like we were well rested either. So I was just like getting to the brink of like just sheer exhaustion at this point. So, we called the midwife in and I was like, and Calvin had briefed the team on our birth plan and had sat them all down and had this conversation. He was like, positive reinforcement in the room only, like, don't come in and if there's anything that's going wrong, please don't address Ash, address me only, like, just to the
amazing.
Team. Yeah, so great. Yeah. So it was hilarious because I was like, look, I'm at the point where I'd like to get checked. So they knew not to ask me to, like, if I wanted to get checked, it had to be initiated by me. Yeah. And also if I wanted to know how many centimeters I was, blah, 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 like I would tell them. So anyway, she comes in and I'm like, look, I want to get checked. And so she checks me to see how dilated I am, if I've made any progress from the morning. And she's like, oh, yep, you're looking very good. Well done. Keep going. And then she goes to walk out of the room and I'm like, hang on.
It's like, if you had good news, you would give us a number, right? Like, oh, wow, well done. There was no number. And I was like, oh, fuck, this is not good.
I was like, hang on a second. Like, how's it going? And she was like, well, according to your birth plan, you need to specifically ask me for how many centimeters you are. And I'm like, lady, Just like,
that's so good that she respected that.
Yeah. Ashley, the zero fucks left Ash at this point. Yeah. 6.5 hours, and she's like, just fucked up in the number.
Yeah. And so she's like, she's trying to be positive, and she's like, look, so your cervix is a lot softer, but you're still at a 3. I was at a 3 when they broke my waters earlier in the morning, and I was like, okay, look, what's the menu? What's the drugs? And she was like, well, so we tried the gas for one breath, and
Ash's like, give me the epidural. I was like, let's try the gas, because that's a part of our plan. We'll start with the gas. So fine, give me the gas.
I tried the gas, and I just wasn't a fan. Like, at that point in time, I think I was just so mentally and physically exhausted from the whole ordeal that trying to time the gas with the contraction and still having to work to get that relief at that point in time was mentally too much for me. Yeah. And I intuitively was like, I'm not coping, and this is going to, I felt like it would be a much worse experience for me if I didn't have the relief that I just needed in that point in time.
Yeah.
So we went for the epidural, which is great. It doesn't always work. For us, it only worked on the left side, not the right side. So they had to constantly keep topping me up, which meant that I couldn't move. Like, ideally, we would have had the type of epidural where you can still move around and all of those types of things, but it didn't work on half of my body. So I was still experiencing like 10 out of 10 pain on one side and numbness on the other side. So it meant they had to increase the dosage enough that I was just completely numb. So couldn't move, couldn't walk. Had the catheter, the whole kit and caboodle, but I was able to get some rest. And given the way that the rest of the day went, I'm actually really glad. Like, I feel like it was the right choice for us in that point in time.
Without a doubt, like, you couldn't do
more than the 6.5. It would have, you could have done, like, it's anything's possible, but you had done such an amazing job for that first 6 hours. Like, it was so fucking intense. And I think one of the biggest things that I was grateful for to have had hypnobirthing with was that 6.5 hours was brutal for me, because I'm watching my wife going through a process of trying to give birth to my daughter, and there's nothing that I can do beyond trying to show up and use any tool I've got to help. And if I didn't have those tools and I didn't have all the training that I had, you'd be like, you know, I was going to say tits on a bull. You'd be useless, because like, you're struggling. I want to help you in some way, but I've got nothing that I can do. And not to say that nearly anything that I did helped, but at least I felt like I could do something. And, you know, and it's difficult because you're going, cool, I'll do acupressure. And then sometimes that'll work. But then the next surge or contraction, then it wasn't working. So I try and do something different. And it was beneficial for me to have had all those tools, because if I didn't have them, it was a very tough 6 hours to watch her in pain so bad and go, this is all part of the process, but I want
to
feel
it
like...
It got me to a point, and I feel like if our situation had been different and I had been progressing and getting to the point of us making it all the way to the end without the pain meds, then those tools would have absolutely got us there. But it was I think the mental, you've not progressed. There's no indication of how long this whole thing is going to take, and can you last that long in this amount of pain? And in my case, I just couldn't, and I was just so exhausted. So I managed to get a good amount of rest, which was, in hindsight, exactly what I needed, because we ended up going into surgery not long after that. And I feel like if I hadn't have had that rest and I had have labored the whole way through without progressing, that I just probably would have felt quite defeated, deflated, and maybe not had the positive experience that I did end up having. So we were checked a few hours later. Once they put the epidural in, they also put me on the Syntrocin drip at that point too, which is supposed to allegedly make you dilate 1 centimeter an hour, which wasn't the case for us.
No.
We got to a 6.
One of those arbitrary numbers that they like to throw out there.
The blankets, 1 centimeter an hour. So no.
Because our bodies are machines also.
Yeah, exactly.
Not true, it doesn't work like that.
You just, it's like a ratchet, just open it up.
So we went on the drip, and then we progressed to about a 6 a few hours later, and everything's looking positive at this point. And our obstetrician was due to come back about another 3 hours later after that. So in that point in time, I got some rest. They told me not to get another top up without checking how we were going, just in case that was an indication that it was time for baby to come on her own. The right side again, just like intense 10 out of 10 pain, but we still weren't progressing any further. So by the time our OB came back, Bubs's heart rate had been elevated for a good 9 minutes at this point without coming back down, and they checked again and we were still at a 6. So the drugs weren't working. She was getting distressed, and the way that they framed it to us was that we'd like to move to a seizure. It's not by any means an emergency seizure, but if we let it go any longer, it could end up being that emergency situation where we've got to rush you there and you're putting unnecessary pressure on the baby, as well being like a little bit more in a heightened stress situation, which she was at that point in time. So they gave us the room for a good 10 minutes where we just got to talk things through and, you know, find our emotions about it all. So they were really supportive in just letting us have space to digest everything, ask all the questions that we wanted to ask, go through, do you know, do we have time, blah, 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 blah. All the brain acronym was amazing at that point in time. Together we decided that we would move forward and have the seizure. But the team at that point was just so supportive and patient with me, because I was terrified of the idea of having surgery. I've never ever in my life have I been hospitalized, had any form of operation, like none of that. So I was like, again, it was like, okay, cool. So now there's a new unknown. Like, I've gone through the labor unknown, but now there's like a surgery unknown. And I'm like, that outcome was never actually something that we'd mentally anticipated for, but with the tools that we had and, you know, asking for the space, asking for the questions, the fact that we were in our own, you know, calm, cool environment that we'd set up exactly how we wanted to, made that whole process a lot less daunting and overwhelming. And they really took the time to explain everything to me, and, you know, no question went unanswered, and, you know, there was no rush, there was no, I just felt really supported by everyone in our space at that point in time. So it felt like it was the right decision, and we went through with it.
There's so much in that. I remember one of the first books I read was, I think it's a book called So You're Going to Become a Dad. And it's by an Australian author based out of Sydney. And he talked about birth plans. And he said, I've seen all these different versions of birth plans. He says, one of the best birth plans you can write is, dear midwives and hospital staff, please deliver a healthy, happy baby and a healthy, happy mum. And I was like, fuck, if we come back to that place, like ultimately, as long as the team knows that that's our outcome, they want to make sure Ash is perfect and that Bubs is perfect. If we can have more than that, we want more than that, and we want to make sure that's our goals. But if we need to, worst case scenario, like just do whatever you need to do to keep mum and Bubs healthy and happy and alive. That's the most important thing.
Yeah.
We had intentions, but we're also clear about the fact that if that's not part of what this birth is meant to be like for us, that's not part of what the birth is meant to be like. So by the time we get to 7:30, nearly 8 o'clock, I'm completely cooked. Like, I was so emotional during the whole process. And like, it didn't help. Like, one of the things that we did was we had a beautiful playlist, but we had all these really beautiful fucking like Disney songs, and I was crying the whole fucking day. I reckon I cried for 28 hours in a row.
I remember waking up at one point from my 90-minute nap.
I was a mess.
And he was just holding my hand and crying to songs and like pressing the epidural button every time the light came on.
Good stuff, right? I was terrible. I don't give a motion to nothing about it.
And then it was a couple of things that really stood out for me in the process, right? So, is it Sally that we had?
Yeah.
So we've got the check at 5 o'clock. Ash is at 6 to 7 centimeters dilated. So we're heading in the right direction. And so Ash is sleeping and I'm sitting next to her. And for everyone, you're in this room and they've got normally like this sort of strap on mum and Bubs that check mum's heart rate and Bubs' heart rate, and fucking all of these sounds are going off and stuff like that as well. And if you can, tell them to fucking turn the sound off, because you're just stressful. I saw you put a post up as well about the clock. So Ash kept checking the clock, so we just took the fucking clock off the wall. I was like, it's like the casino. You don't know where we're at, right? So that was a really big thing for us. But I wanted to make sure that, and like Sally was really supportive, but at about 7 o'clock, I saw her looking at the clock. I saw her looking at the accounts, and she didn't say anything to me. And then I saw her start prepping stuff. And I was like, I'm pretty sure if we have a natural birth, we don't need any of the things that you're prepping. And I'm also thinking to myself as well, maybe she's just prepping in case we need to have a Caesar. But I was like, but you're breaking open sealed things and bringing out like pain syringes. So I'm thinking, can she see something that I can't see, and we're just not having that dialogue? And so sure enough, when Lisa came back in, She did another check. Ash hadn't dilated any further. And Sally's like, well, I didn't want to tell you any bad news while Ash was sleeping. I want to let you rest, but I could tell from this that we're not making any progress and Bubs' heart rate's elevating and we're not comfortable with it. So I think that was great for her to go, as a professional, you want to make sure she's anticipating what's coming next. And if she thinks that we're going to head to a Caesar, I'd want her to be prepared for that so we're not rushed. But she did a great job of not telling me that we were heading down that journey, but was prepared for it if it needed to get there, which was great.
Yeah, I think this all kind of comes back to what I took away most from hypnobirthing, which was regardless of your outcome, make sure that, you know, you're feeling a certain way and that your emotional space during the process is able to be contained in these positive feelings, because they did give us the space that we needed to maintain that.
Said we're going to move to Caesar, I was like, fuck, this is not part of our plan. Like, and then I was like, well, what if we wait half an hour, right? Because I was like, I don't think they'll give us an hour, but I'll ask for half an hour. And then Lee's like, look, we can wait if you want to, but if Ash would have made progress, if we've waited for 3.5 hours and Ash hasn't made any progress, so I don't think half an hour is going to make a difference. And the reason why we're suggesting it is not because we need you to have a Caesar, but because Bubs' heart rate has elevated and we're getting to a point where it's becoming uncomfortable. So okay, well, and I could see the chart. Like, I'm looking at Bubs' heart rate the whole time. And so it's okay, no problems. But then you're like, well, what's the reality of a Caesar? And then they go, well, by the way, you need to sign a declaration to say that you're okay with her having a blood transfusion because 1 in 10 women fucking bleed out on the table. I'm like, what the fuck? This is not part of the plan. I'm fucking freaking out. And then you got to get fully dressed in scrubs and boots and all this sort of stuff. And it's intense. So it's like, can we just have 5 minutes? And to their credit, everyone fucking left the room. Like, yeah, no problem. Like, no argument. Everyone fucking left.
And
their energy as well was really conducive to supporting the energy that we wanted. Yeah. It was grounded. It was the language that they used was supportive as well. Yeah. It was like, it was like talking to your mum about it as opposed to talking to an intimidating doctor that's telling you scary things. It was like, it felt like a group of friends that were there and they were going to be there the entire way. So that's how it made me feel anyway.
And then Ash had a list of obviously questions and concerns when we had our check. And I was like, look, if I trusted that Ash would do everything possible to give Alila the best chance to be birthed naturally. And she had done an unbelievable fucking job at this point. And I think there was an awareness for me in realizing that she's gone through, like, since her waters broke at 6 a.m., this is over 12 hours of really intense labor. So even when with the epi, even though she wasn't struggling through it, her body's still working. It's just that she's not aware of the... Yeah. And Bubs is still feeling all of that as well. So I was like, we have a dynamic where I know Ash is always going to give it 150%. And if I felt like she could push on a bit more, like when first Ash had asked for the epi, I was like, let's try gas first because I know that you'll feel better about having tried gas than going to the epi straight away. But once it was clear that that wasn't working, it's like, cool, I trust you to be able to make the best decision. And we checked in. Ash was comfortable getting the Caesar. I just wanted to make sure everyone was healthy and happy. And then when we came back in, we went through, asked for all these questions. They explained them all really peacefully and calmly. And then as soon as we had given them the green light, they were excellent. Everyone was in. We got that was quite a stressful experience. So had we not been calm and collected and prepped and asked for the space and time, if we had to go to an emergency Caesar, that would have been fucking horrific for people because, you know, there's an extra bed that gets wheeled in and then there's like 30 people in the room, or what feels like 30 people in the room. There was probably only 6. But, you know, you've had a very peaceful space of mood lighting and fairy lights and Disney soundtracks on in the background to then having lights on and people moving people into beds and socks on and then I'm in scrubs and it's just like things happen so quickly as part of that process. But to their credit, we had a really great team. A midwife came with us, which was great. And then...
She was amazing. It made the whole process much more like light and like lighthearted, wasn't it? She took photos for us. She was like, give me your phones. I'll take photos. I'll make sure that you capture all the moments that you need.
Great.
And the anaesthetist as well was amazing.
It was really good.
Because the epidural hadn't worked on one side, I was paranoid that because they were using the same drip to administer the drugs for the cesarean pain relief, I was like, well, does that mean that this side, like, it's not going to work as well? And he's like, no, it's like different medication, you'd be totally fine. And I had to get him 3 times to do the tests Because it's an ice test.
Yeah.
Because the pain receptors are the same as your cold receptors. So he's like, do you feel this? Do you feel this? Do you feel this? And I'm like, wait, I think I felt it that time. And he's like, okay, let's do that. He's just so patient with me.
He's like, don't worry, I wouldn't trust me either. Let's do this again.
It wasn't like medical professionals telling you what you needed to do. It was like a group of friends. It was a really, really special experience, actually.
Yeah, it was really good. I mean, and to put it into context as well, right? So at this point, before we go in for a Caesar, I'm a fucking mess, right? I'm all over the place, right? I'm just so proud of Ash. I'm just so in that pocket. So I'm crying uncontrollably. And then, of course, we go to a Caesar, and I'm just assuming the worst-case scenario at this point. Like, I'm trying to advocate, but I can't. Like, I'm drowning at this point. I'm bawling my eyes out. I've got pockets full of tissues because I'm just, like, a mess. I was just so tired and so emotional. Everything was just so much. And I was, at this point, just really praying that everything was going to be fine because I was like, this was our last worst-case scenario, and now we're living that. I'm like, I really want to make sure it's all good.
Yeah.
And of course, you go into surgery. It's fucking major surgery. So you're like, people have issues all the time with major surgery. Thankfully, we had an amazing team and everything was perfect. But I was just a blubbering mess. Ash was fantastic the whole way through. And they did a great job of sort of calming me down and making sure that I was okay through that process because I was really not good. Like, I teach emotional mastery, but I was drowning. I was not in a good place.
I think he is the best trauma.
But saying that though, men do experience birth trauma in the series.
And when my dad was in this situation, he went into the birthing suite and then nearly passed out and had to go and sit in the waiting room in the scrubs because he couldn't be around mom. And I was like, I don't want to have that experience. Like, look, if you're not going to pass out, please pass out over here. I'm like, oh, fuck. But then they deliver Bubs, and then there's this moment where they're like, yep, she's out. And you know there's a baby in the room, but you can't hear her yet because she hasn't screamed yet. And that, what was probably 3 seconds, felt like an hour. And then as soon as you...
We were just looking at each other like...
And then she came out, and we asked them to do delayed cord clamping, and then we had the ability to go, cool, can we do swabbing and all that sort of stuff, and then can we do delayed cord clamping? And to their credit, they were excellent at all of that, so they really did that for us as well, to the best of what we could with a Caesar as opposed to a natural birth. And that was just really excellent. And then, so we had given birth to Alila at 8:55, and then they wheeled us back up to the birthing suite, and then it was time to start breastfeeding. And that, by the way, like, I think one of the things that I want everyone that's listening to be aware of is, don't just spend time planning what birth is going to be like. Spend time planning what the 5 days after birth is going to be like, because no one puts any focus or thought into that, and that's infinitely harder than what birth is like. Like, it's really fucking intense, especially day three when
it's just hard.
Like, it's brutal. And you really no idea where you're going and what weighs up or down. Like, we're very lucky we had private health, right? Because I was asking them, I was like, what's the difference between private and public? And I know there's people who've had negative experiences with private and positive experiences with public, but one of the big ones was like when day three after Caesar at public, you're getting discharged sometimes 2 days after or a day after natural biological birth, you're discharged. Like, we were in there for what felt like 6 days?
We were there for 5 nights, and there was literally no rush. Like, and for us, we needed that time.
Oh, yeah.
And the support from the midwifery team as well. So we were very well supported the whole way through. And there was never any, like, they were kind of like left it up to us as to when we wanted to be discharged. So they would ask us, like, are you ready? Like, do you need an extra day? So credit to the team at the hospital that we were at. They were just incredibly supportive the whole way through. So there was no, for us, it wasn't like, hey, we need your room back. It was like, take your time. If you need the support, we're here. You know, do you need another day? So that was incredible. And I think just to touch on what you said, something that we also took away from hypnobirthing was, you know, the fact that you're there, you're doing it with your partner, making sure that you guys are a really solidified team and you have had those harder conversations before leading up to birth is just so important. Because what I didn't realize after a Caesar is just how hard that recovery is. Like, you can't move, you're bedridden for at least 24 hours after, so it's not like you can just get up and grab your baby. Like, you need the support of your partner or your whoever your birth partner is after birth as well, not just during labor, to, you know, in case something does go wrong, or you've got more ailments than you anticipated, or you have had to have surgery, or you've got, you know, a huge amount of stitches, or whatever it is, that whatever happens in your birth, having that person there to support you in that afterbirth process, at least for that first week or so, to be able to, you know, if it wasn't for Cal, I would have been, you know, I would have had to buzz the midwives in every time I needed to feed the baby, or every time the baby was crying, because it literally takes me 5 minutes to get up out of bed. So, and, you know, if your new brand new baby's screaming, that could be as well a very traumatic experience in that afterbirth process, to not have someone there who's just hands-on and ready to go with you. So the teamwork aspect of it is so
definitely
important.
So big, and particularly the breastfeeding, that's something I really encourage my clients to get educated around. If breastfeeding is important, it's so hard to figure out what the fuck's going on when you're, you know, you've just given birth and you're trying to get this baby to latch. You need to put that time and prep in beforehand, and the postpartum as well, and particularly in this day and age that we're in, where, you know, families are often separated, if you don't have that family support there, how else are you going to get supported? Because we can't do this alone.
No.
We are not meant to do it alone. And we go through so many changes. Our brains change, our bodies change. We need that support. And 100%. Even just for, like, the two of you, or, you know, the partners, how's your relationship going to change? How's your social life going to change, and your finances, and all of those things that often are boiling points for tension. You don't need those things. So actually taking the time to just think about it and have those hard conversations when you're not in a really emotional space.
I think one of the principles that you shared at the course around hypnobirthing, which I've tried to keep going post-birth, is this idea of, like, advocating for mum and bubs. So I think you give the analogy of mum needs to be in that sort of primal place, and that I can act as the sort of neocortex, right, and make the decision making. And once I understood my role in that, that was very easy for me to do. But then post-birth as well, like, cool, you've given birth now, but mum still needs to be in that same place. Like, that bubble doesn't just disappear straight away. And so, you know, even down to, like, our family, now we've got a very big family. So I think collectively between the two different groups,
like 30 close, and what would be considered close family members.
And when you think about then just trying to manage visitation, right? Like, if everyone comes to see Zalila once a week, that would be like 3 to 4 visitors a day. It's just not going to be possible, right? And so trying to set clear boundaries and expectations as part of that as well. I think it was very easy for us to go, we give zero fucks about anybody else. Most important in the world is Ash and Alila. If they're happy, everything else is all good. And so if they're not happy, then fuck off with your expectations and what you think this is about for you guys. Because it's not about you guys, it's about Ash and Alila. And that needs to be priority number one. And so I'd really encourage people just to be okay with setting those boundaries. And that's going to ruffle people some feathers, but you've got to get over that real quick. Because, you know, the, like, it's very, it was very easy for me to be selfish in that way for them. And just being okay with that and using that as a big reset for us, I think, was really important. And that meant some difficult conversations, but at the end of the day, it's not really that important. What's important is the two of them.
And again, we had all of those conversations before we'd given birth. So we knew that we would want space to ourselves, and we, you know, were proactive with communicating to the family, hey, don't expect to come and see us at hospital, because that period of time is going to be super important for us just to bond as a family and, you know, find our feet as parents. So the more you can preempt what your family is going to be like after birth, and make sure that you're communicating to them ahead of time to be like, look, this is what we're going to need. And if we feel amazing, we'll let you know. But if we don't, just don't expect to hear from us until we contact you.
I love that you've brought that up, because that's definitely something that I love talking to my clients about. It's one, boundary setting, and two, being okay to receive support. And that's obviously support that the mum wants, not that someone else wants to give to you, and you don't necessarily want it.
Such a powerful distinction. That's so true.
Because
there can be some people that you feel so at ease with, that the help is really easy to take on board, whereas there can be other people where it's like, I feel like I'm trying to entertain you or having to have conversations, and that's exhausting.
Coming over and holding the baby while I got wash the dishes isn't actually supporting me. You
don't wash the dishes,
But it's so hard for us to set boundaries and receive that support. So I encourage my clients, if they do struggle with that, start small and start now. Start in pregnancy. Start before pregnancy. Right? If you have someone say, here, let me carry that for you, and you say, no, no, it's fine, I've got it, just instead of letting that slip out your mouth,
yeah.
let them do it, right?
Yeah.
Start with those really small things mm. because you can't expect to be uncomfortable with those small things and then
yeah.
think, well, when I need the support, when yeah. I've got my baby, I'll be able to receive it, because
yeah.
you won't.
Yes, yes, that's so true.
One of the things that we discussed before we'd given birth to Alila was this idea that for me, I wanted to create an environment for Ash where if I wasn't there at home and I had to be at the office, for example, that there was as much support as possible. And my sort of intention behind it was I want to create an environment where if we have too much support, we can always take a step back and not have as much. Because my expectation was if we're tired and we're feeling broken, and it's been a really bad night, when you're in that place, it's not a great place to try and coordinate support. So we up the amount of times that our cleaner came to the house, for example, and we have twice a week now. I also organized as well for, like, our mums do a night each where they come and help out, and then we hired like a night nanny to come and help as well, my cousin Indy. So she does two nights a week as well. And so that means that in most of a week, we get at least two nights of a week where we have somebody in the house to help out, and that means that we can get a good night's sleep. And then it means that if in a week we're not feeling like we need it, we can just say no. But if we don't, it's already there. It's like we're not trying to coordinate a cleaner when the house is a mess and Bubs is feeding yeah. and is throwing up all over herself. And so, like, I think it was good for us to prep that ahead of time.
Yeah.
But I think part of that all comes down to, like, we're in a fortunate economic position where we can do that. Mm-hmm. But that also started because 5 years ago when we got together, we were clear on what we wanted our family life to look like, and we've made sacrifices for the last 5 years to put ourselves in that financial position, right?
Yeah.
We were just having that conversation beforehand around whether Ash was going to have to come back to work, and we've created it where she doesn't have to if she doesn't want to, and if she does, great. So I think everyone can start thinking about and being intentional about what you want your life to look like with children, and that doesn't always work. Like, you know, we're fortunate we're still together, and not every couple is like that, but, you know, just being intentional is better than not being intentional. If you leave stuff to chance, so many things can go wrong.
Yeah.
And I think, like you say, and like you teach, that accepting support and help, it does not make you a failure of a mother. Or if
no.
you have, if we have a night nanny and she comes and helps us out once a week, that's not to say that I am not capable of doing it on my own. It's, you know, when you're not supposed to, that
yeah.
as you teach in your program, history shows that, you know, when we are in our most primal states, and in communities and things like that, everyone pitches in and helps, and it's
mm-hmm.
not just up to the mother to do everything and continue to run the household and support the family and make the
yeah.
meals and do all that alone. It's
yeah.
about being able to accept the support and the help as you
yeah.
need it.
That's right. Mothering and housekeeping are two different roles.
Yeah.
They're two full-time roles in themselves,
yeah.
and we've just grouped it all together. Well, you're
yeah.
at home with the baby.
You've
you should
home.
Be, or
yeah.
I should be cooking dinner and having a clean house and having, you know,
yeah.
the kids presented beautifully.
Yeah.
Doesn't work that way.
Oh, God,
we
no.
need that support
yeah.
Yeah.
for both of them. We can't take on those two full-time roles and expect that we're going to come out feeling okay.
Oh, 100%.
We're just
and, like,
be exhausted.
My mindset's always been that
Ash, the most important role is mother. So Ash, if she has time and capacity, should spend all of her time with Alila, nurturing and loving and developing Alila. Do I give a fuck if the house is clean or not? No, I don't, because the most important thing is Alila. We can find a cleaner to come and do that. I can't find a mother for Alila, right? That's what she was born to do. So, like, if we can be in that position, and we're not always in that position, just mother Alila, and we'll take care of everything else that's not doing that.
Yeah.
Because if I, like, the way I think about it is, if I was at home, I'm not fucking cleaning the house. I'm spending time with Alila, and I'll hire somebody to clean the house. So, like, we're very clear on that expectation for us. And, you know, we work hard to create an environment where that's possible. And I know not every family is like that. You do the best that you can with what you got. But for us, we're very clear on that, because I'm like, well, that's the best use of your life is to do that. And if Ash didn't want to be a stay-at-home mum, then that wouldn't be an expectation either. We would figure that out as well. So just wrap Alila up in a sling and she'll do sales calls with me. But, you know, the last 7 weeks now has just been an absolute blur. And we were talking before the podcast about how you think about some things in life as being finite, like time. You got 24 hours in the day, and yeah, you take up a lot of that time with the child. But love is not finite. And it has been expansionary for me and for Ash. I just didn't think I could love anything more than, and just, it's a whole different life and just a whole different, it's just unbelievable. And we're just so grateful. And we're so grateful for
yes.
you
yeah.
for being so involved in that
yeah.
birth process. Because I can tell you now, had we not gone through hypnobirthing, if you wrote a list of all the things that happened, planning a natural birth, getting induced, 27 hours of labor, then going into a Caesar, you'd go, fuck, that sounds traumatic. And it could have very easily been very traumatic for us had we not had the hypnobirthing
experience. I 100% could see myself having a really hard time after birth and finding that entire process traumatizing if I hadn't worked with you and I hadn't had the tools that I did have and I hadn't had the understanding that, okay, if things don't go to plan, I can still feel all the things that I want to feel and we can still utilize all the tools and I can still be calm and happy and, you know, give birth from that place, then I 100% I could see myself being, just never wanting to have another baby. I could, it was an incredibly powerful, powerful program and we would recommend everyone to do it for sure.
I think the best case scenario, or so the worst case scenario, is you do hypnobirthing and you don't need any of the tools and that's a huge victory. Whereas the other alternative is you don't do the program and then shit goes wrong and then you spend the rest of your life trying to work through the trauma of a really negative birth experience for mum and bubs. It's just that's not a risk that you'd take. So I think we got huge benefits from it and we really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. I just want to say, because we kind of skipped through without me saying anything about your birth plan, you guys were just such an incredibly strong team. And I know even prior to going in for that induction, the conversations that you guys were having were so robust around what is the right thing for us to do here. And I just knew that you were going in feeling so prepared and confident in your decisions that you were making. So you really kind of took all of that on board and used all of those tools. And I can teach anyone those tools, whether they use it and utilize it, it's, you know, I've got no control over that.
Yes.
So the fact that you guys were able to take those learnings and really implement what worked for you to be able to move through that really beautiful experience together as a team. And I know you're saying you're a blubbering mess, but I would guarantee in that space you were very, very supportive and exactly what Ashley would have needed.
100%. I feel like the fact that it was a blubbering mess made me feel less like a blubbering mess. It's like, it's lovely.
Yeah. And there's absolutely no failing with birth, but also with hypnobirthing, right? It's not, you didn't plan to have a natural birth and you had a C-section, so that was a hypnobirthing failure. It was actually all of those tools got you to that point.
Yes.
So congratulations to the two of you.
Thank you.
What an incredible, beautiful story, and what a very clever little girl you've got for picking you two to be her parents.
Oh, yeah, she's there's
she's her father's daughter.
In the very beginning, actually.
Struggled with breastfeeding. And by the way, if you struggle breastfeeding, get yourself a nipple shield. That thing's a game changer. They should just give them out at like candy to a baby when mums are in hospital. But I remember maybe a day in, 2 days in, and Alila's losing her shit trying to feed. And Ash is struggling, I'm not doing this properly. And the midwife came to her and she says, well, it's really not your fault. Like, your daughter's just a very aggressive and impatient feeder. And I'm like, I'm so sorry. This is definitely on me. This is my character traits coming through. She loses her mind.
You've got 30 seconds to get her on. If not, all hell breaks loose. She's angry.
She's just so, so perfect, so magnificent. We're just so blessed. And, it's such a game changer in so many aspects of our lives, and you've got two, so we've got that next. So it's a wild ride, but we just want to say thank you.
Yeah.
Oh, really, it's just such an honor to have you guys be my clients and get to share this really beautiful experience with you. So thank you.
How can we find out more about you for everyone that's listening at home and they want to find out more about you and the working with you?
So I'm most active on Instagram, so I'm at Bear Your Birth, so bear.your.birth. And my website is bearyourbirth.com.au. So you can book directly into my classes from that website.
Yep.
Come and hang out on Instagram and jump into my DMs and say hey.
Yeah,
slide
I'm
in.
I'm sure they will.
If you're based in Perth, for sure, and you want to do hypnobirthing, hit up Karen.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, you can do that.
Yeah.
If you can try and live stream the classes, you'll have people online as well. we appreciate you. Thank you so much for your time today as well. And and just for everything. It's been amazing, and it was beautiful to complete the full circle and go through the story with you as well.
Amazing. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Guys, for everyone that's listening, thank you so much for joining us for this experience. On behalf of all of us, we want to say thank you for being here. Please go and check out Kieran's stuff, of course, and wherever you're watching this or listening to it, leave us a like, a comment, a subscription, a follow, anything else, Jade, that they need to do. That's all those things. We've said enough. Lots of love, good luck and bless, and we'll see you on the wild side. Thanks, guys.
That's it, tribe, for another episode of The Wildcast. Please make sure you like, comment and subscribe. Give us a review on iTunes and jump on over to our YouTube channel to catch the video version of the show, because I know you'll love it. Until I see you live or online, be bold, have fun and make an impact, and I will see you on the wild side.